Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit. Welcome to another episode of More Than Ordinary, brought to you by Seven Generation Games. I'm Anne Marie DeMars.
And I'm Maria Burns Ortiz. And today we're talking about diversity in tech, or maybe more accurately, lack of diversity in tech.
Being one of the more diverse tech companies around, I can tell you that we are constantly running into stereotypes. I will go to tech meetups in Santa Monica, shout out to Silicon Beach, and people will think that I'm the wait staff. Can you go and get me a drink?
Or I was at an event that was actually supposed to be for high-level employees, founders, presidents, CEOs, and I was talking to someone there and they said to me, and this was not the first time that it's happened to me, it happens to me actually semi-regularly, oh, so you're with Seven Generation, so are you a member of the PR team?
Right, I get that all the time. People think I'm in marketing. No, I am one of the co-founders and half of the original software development team.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, I'm at the point where it's happened so often that it's just kind of like, but I just say now, I'm just like, no, I'm the CEO and co-founder. And all of a sudden, people's faces kind of drop. Like, I think it forces them to reflect and realize stereotypes that they might not even realize that they have.
Or that time we were looking into hiring an outsourcing team, and I talked to their software person who is not what I would consider the highest qualified person ever. And he was asking for things that I said, we're not going to give you, or asking for specifics that I kind of thought, well, gee, if I'm giving you all that level of detail, I may as well write the code myself. And then he says to me, maybe I should talk to your tech guy.
Which is about the most surefire way to no longer be involved in any project we're doing.
It's not just us. Remember Google, recently they had a board meeting and one of their investors was asking a question. He says, I have a question for the lady CFO.
Which then resulted in most of the staff were women. Adding on to their signatures, lady senior vice president, lady senior developer, because clearly there's actual CFOs and lady CFOs, at least according to some people. It seems so mind-boggling that in 2016, we could actually have women in C-level positions.
It's funny, I recently got an invite to something saying, where are the lady software developers at? So they're organizing a meetup for women in tech in Los Angeles. Obviously, immediately replied. So you might think that this is just annoying. Well, it's annoying, but it's more than that. It's in some ways a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it's also very, very, very insulting. If you have ever said something like, well, we would like to have more women in tech, or we would like to have more minorities, but we don't want to lower our standards. You know what? I am allowed one swear per episode. So I just want to say, all you people that say we would like to have women and minorities, but we don't want to lower our standards, you can kiss my ass right now. Because what that's saying implicitly is that women, Latinos, African Americans, Native Americans are less qualified. They're less intelligent. They're less capable of having those jobs. And you know what? You can bite me because we have a company where the majority of our software developers are Latino, where the majority of our artist, a Latino or Native American, and we have an awesome, amazing staff.
Well, and one of our upcoming guests in the future, Lilian Monte from Sabio, and I were at a conference a couple weeks ago, and it was one for minorities, and somebody had asked a panel of investors, you know, why aren't more Latinas getting funding? And one of the men on the panel started off by saying, well, you need to understand that the money we're investing is, you know, firefighters' pensions. To which the two of us, who happen to be seeing the same people, looked at each other as in, what? And that's an intentional stuttering because we could not understand how that makes any difference. Oh, because firefighters' pensions, so we can't invest in Latina founders. And then the same investor was at another event I was at somewhat recently, and they asked him again about why there's not enough diversity in investment, why, you know, minorities get, well, I believe it's Latinos get less than 1% of VC funding. And his answer again was, well, you know, we're not investing our money. We're investing firefighter pensions, which one, I don't know what firefighters have against investing in minorities or how those two things are at all related. You know, oh, so women have no good ideas, or we need to protect this money by only investing in white dudes. And I mean, when all of the numbers, all of the data, everything you see shows that minority owned businesses tend to return much better value. When you look at women owned businesses, women founder teams, their startups are far more likely to succeed. And yet there's this message that you're hearing about, well, we can't invest in them because they're too risky.
What I think is, listen, dude, you're talking about an area, startups, where 90% of companies fail. So you're telling me you're risk averse. You're all of a sudden risk averse when you bring up Latinos, you bring up women, but 90% of startups fail. And again, I think there's a stereotype and there's a double standard that when you fail at something and you're a minority-owned company, a women-owned woman-owned company, they say, oh, well, you know,
we tried that once.
Right. Or we should have invested for team or product as opposed to doing a diversity investment. But they invest in a white dude's company that fails. It's like, oh, well, he was an innovator. It was a risk. It's very irritating. And I've heard many women at many levels, from Frances Perkin, who is the Secretary of Labor, who is the first person, woman in the cabinet, to Rhonda, who was, you know, in judo and then MMA, say that I don't want to fail, not only for myself, but because if I fail, they'll say a woman can't do it. If you have a man in a job or attempting something, his company goes under, they don't have a series A, people don't say, oh, well, we're not going to invest in another white dude. We're not going to invest in another Asian dude in tech. But they say, oh, well, obviously they're not as qualified.
Ever feel like it is hard to make friends with people from other planets? Tired of other races in the Gamma Quadrant pushing you around? The universe is a dangerous place. The Dominion can help. We offer mediation, protection. Ketracel White provided to every new recruit. Contact us via the iTunes store under the Gamma Quadrant, and one of our Vortas will be happy to send you an application.
The Gamma Quadrant is the podcast dedicated to all things Deep Space Nine. Look for us at gammaquadrant.libsyn.com, which is LIBSYN, or under Gamma Quadrant at the iTunes store.
It's Terry Lewis of the band Great White, and you're listening to More Than Ordinary, and just be yourself. Go for it. Don't hold back.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm still Anne Maria DeMars. And now we're going to rant about self-fulfilling prophecy. Why aren't there more Latinos or African Americans or Native Americans or women in tech?
And I don't think this is just tech specific, but not that long ago, obviously there was the Supreme Court decision about affirmative action. And a cartoonist who's pretty successful had tweeted, you know, how many people had an Abby tell them in school that you're only here because you're the diversity, you know, the token diversity student. Abby was the name. I can't even remember her last name at the moment.
But who
the
cares?
of the girl that brought this case to the court, saying that she was discriminated against getting into the University of Texas because of her race, when despite the fact, and I guess some of these people don't actually deal in facts, that her grades were not good enough. And I tweeted back, you know, it's not just at the university level. You know, when I got my first newspaper reporting job, I had multiple people who worked with me who said in no uncertain terms, the only reason that you got this newspaper reporting job was because you're a Hispanic woman. I've written a New York Times bestseller, and where are they? But, you know, not that I had any actual ability was what they were telling me to my face. And so I kind of had tweeted back about this, and I ended up with this long discussion that started running on my Facebook page about people I know who basically were all chiming in and saying, yep, same thing happened to me, same thing happened to me, or my college counselor suggested that I not apply to the upper tier schools that I was applying to, but look at easier schools. And, you know, the woman that posted that pointed out that, and I got into all but one of those upper tier schools. another person I know who's a relatively successful editor at a leading global news site had said, yeah, well, my college counselor said, have you looked at trade schools? I bet you know a lot of people that work in the trades. And this idea that from basically the moment that you start looking at your career path, even before that, you're being told these messages of you shouldn't even try for this and or you don't deserve this.
And that happens to people all through their lives. And I think that's one of the reasons that the data show that women-owned companies, that minority-owned companies, when they do get funding, are more likely to be successful. Because those people have had to barrel through every one of those objections. They've had to look everybody in the face for years and years and years who told them they weren't smart enough, they weren't good enough, they didn't have the connections, and say, you know what? I'm doing it anyway. And those people are a good bet. And I don't want to be just negative, so I want to say some things about what you can do. And first of all, what you can do as a parent is not accept that. Because I remember when you personally were in high school and you went to the guidance counselor and she said, where are you thinking of going to school? And you said, New York University or Harvard University. And she laughed and she said, oh yeah, everybody would like to go there, but why don't you look at Santa Monica College? Now, nothing wrong with Santa Monica College. They're a good community college in the neighborhood, but Maria had a 4.3 GPA. She was a National Hispanic Scholar, which meant she had one of the highest SAT scores of Hispanic kids in the country. And I called that counselor up and I read her the riot act up and down. And I said, look, maybe your kid's going to Santa Monica College, but if my kid says she's going to NYU or Harvard, by God, that's where she's going to go. And who do you think you are to tell her she can't? Do you know anything about her besides that her name is Maria? You know, do you know what her scores are? Do you know that she's in a bunch of AP classes? So I think often Latino parents, particularly if you are kind of old school, you were brought up to have a respect for education and for teachers. So I'm not saying you go down and yell at your kid's teacher if they're getting a C, because probably your kid deserved that C. But that if you have a teacher that you feel is giving your child lower expectations, that you go in and you say to them, what is it that my child needs to do to get into those AP classes? You think that my child is not prepped to go to Harvard. What do they need to do?
Although sometimes I would argue that the people who are in those positions, and this is, I guess, an unfortunate reflection of many of the issues that we have in education right now, will say, well, I don't know if they can be. I mean, there's all this data that's shown, you know, that minority students are far less likely to be referred into AP classes, to be referred into honors courses, based solely on the fact that teachers don't see them as smart. Well, and it's this unconscious bias that I think really needs to shift. Although I do think parents going in and advocating for their kids is obviously a tremendous advantage and something that certainly I as a parent have been really aware of doing and really conscious of, because I think if you're not going to stand up for your child, again, not that crazy parent that thinks that your kid should get an A when they put in C effort, but if you don't go in and advocate for your child, especially early on, who will?
And again, I think it has to do with a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you think students can't do well, that they don't. And it's not just, oh, I think I can succeed. It's like Terry Luce was saying in the other podcast, it's not, I believe I can be a rock star. You have to go in the studio and practice and you have to do those small clubs and you have to do those other things. But I look, for example, at Julia, who was taking an AP Algebra 2 class. And the first test, she got a D. And Julia always got A's in everything. And she was ready to drop out. Some of her friends dropped the class. And I actually was willing to let her drop the class. And I thought, oh, well, maybe she'd do better taking the regular Algebra 2 and making an A in it. And both Dennis and my brother, who's a math teacher, said, don't let her do it. And we signed her up for this ALEC system. One of our competitors, it was okay. She got bored and didn't do it very much, which is why we do seven-generation games, so kids will keep doing things and not be bored. But we had her go to the tutor. Her school provides a tutor after school. Dennis worked with her on her problems, so we worked with her a lot so that she could succeed. And in the end, I think she ended up getting a B-plus in both semesters of Algebra 2 honors. So, okay, she didn't get an A in it, but she brought her grade up from a D to a B-plus. So she could do it, and she ended up, you know, finishing calculus by the end of high school. So we've been talking a lot about self-fulfilling prophecies for students, people not going into tech. But what about startups? And here's one of my pet peeves. Now, I understand that if you have a mountain of money somewhere, it's your money. whether you inherit it from your parents or you earn it yourself, it's your money.
Unless, of course, you're investing firefighter pensions.
And you have every legal right to do what you would so desire. Though the firefighters might like Latinos, you never know.
I would think they do. There's Latino firefighters.
Good point. But if you are investing funds and then you turn around and you say that, well, gee, these people we gave a bunch of money to did so much better in development than these people who had no money, that's why we don't give these people any money. I think, again, you're in a vicious circle. I look at some of the stuff we've done, and I was looking at some of our games from even a year ago, and I thought, wow, the stuff we're coming out with now is so much better because we're getting better. But that time lag from a year ago till now, if we'd had three times as much money, we could have made that progress in 3 months because we were out raising funds and we didn't have, you know, one of our full-time developers got hired 6 months ago. So you can't give one company $7 million and give another company $200,000 and then say, oh, well, these people here are obviously so much better.
Right. Well, and what's really the $7 million made me think was most. So there was this game a couple of years ago. Everywhere you turned, it was the greatest game. It was going to be this huge game. It was going to shift educational games. And they raised a Series A. And I believe it was $7 million. And now they no longer exist. You know, they put out one level and they no longer exist. And yet they were held up as this great company before they'd even put out a game, released a game. And we have now got six games total between what we've released and what we have actually in, through the pre-production stages. And we've brought in 1.7 almost, you know, and yet this other 1.7 million, this other company is held up as the standard, yet we're looked down and people will look at our stuff sometimes, especially when I'm talking to VCs or things, and it's like, oh, well, you don't have this, you don't have that, you need to get your traction numbers up. And yet a company that had not released a single game gets all this money. And then that double standard between, well, you don't have all of these things, and so we're not giving you money, and well, they didn't have these things. We gave them a ton of money. And then how do you rationalize that?
Well, I wasn't as big a fan of Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, as some people. But there were some things that she said that I agreed with. And one of them was a study that she cited that showed that women are judged based on their accomplishments, where men are judged based on their potential. And potential is, of course, very subjective. So this $7 million Series A company there, oh my goodness, they're going to do these great things where they're looking at, well, you've done good stuff, some really good stuff, but it isn't great, awesome, amazing. Well, maybe if you give us the $7 million, we would.
Yeah, and we might still be around because we're going in. We now can pretty much say we'll be around for a total of 5 years at the very least, which puts us in like the 1% of startups. So you would think if we were in the 1% of startups, maybe we could get into that 1% of startups that get funding that are Latino, or the 3% that are women owned. But apparently we are held to a very different standard.
That's all right. Like I used to do judo. Well, I still do judo, but I used to compete in judo. And there are a couple of things I brought away from that. I remember when I was younger, there were a lot of people that didn't think women should be doing judo, and they would throw me as hard as they could and pound me into the mat. And I'm still here.
Well, that's why I think they call it laughing all the way to the bank, because that's what I plan on doing.
Well, that's what I say. Keep it up till the haters ask if you're hired.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
I'm Anne-Marie DeMars. We make games that make you smarter, and this is the part of the podcast where we make you smarter with our tips.
So we're talking about self-fulfilling prophecies and basically looking at how if you discount someone from birth, then maybe you can't be surprised when they aren't as successful as somebody else who's had every given advantage. But one of the things that we really try and do, and I think it's something we've discussed a lot amongst ourselves, is making sure that there are people. So when someone says, well, there are no Latinos in tech, there's no, this isn't what a CEO looks like, this isn't what a developer looks like, this isn't what someone who succeeds in the classroom looks like, we try and make ourselves visible to say, why not? Why can't I be a CEO? Why, when you look at me, do you say, oh, are you the PR person or the wait staff? And I think for kids, going to schools and having someone that they can look at and see, oh, she doesn't look like I've been programmed my entire life to think somebody who's in that position looks like, can hopefully make a small difference and start to change their thinking.
Right. I think that's our first tip for being more than ordinary. Get out there as much as you can and be in front of people's faces, whether it's presenting at conferences, going into classrooms. I've Skyped into classrooms. So if there's a classroom in Southern Alabama and you're an African-American CEO in New York or Los Angeles, maybe you could just show up on Skype in their classroom and the students could answer you questions. If you are able to just take 1 hour and drive from your office downtown in whatever city you live in and talk to students about your career, so many people complain about the status of education. They complain about how students aren't achieving in math, or they're not working enough, or there are not enough people in tech. So be part of the solution. Get out of your office. I do it, and I cannot believe that everybody listening to the podcast is busier than me. One of the things that we do at Seven Generation Games that I would really encourage more software companies to do is we try to involve schools in development. There's a lot of talk about makerspaces and teaching kids to code, but I don't think that many teachers have real expertise in software development. That's why they're in teaching. They have a lot of expertise in teaching. We try to partner with classrooms where we will go in and start at the very alpha design level. Here's what we're making. And then we will go in and show the students, here's what we did. Try it out. And there will be lots of bugs in it, because there always is. One of the best lines I heard from somebody in the last year, it was commencement speech. And this woman said, we compare our own first drafts to other people's finished products. And you generally don't see the first draft. So if you're starting to write code or work on Photoshop or whatever it is you're doing, you're going to make mistakes. And then you're going to say, well, my program isn't that elaborate. My program has bugs in it. My program doesn't work. My HTML is not great. Whatever it is. And if you've, on top of that, been bombarded with messages saying you're not that good, you're not that smart, then you're going to give up. What you need to see is everybody's first draft is crap. I think I'm a pretty good developer. I know I'm a slam dunk statistician. I mean, I have a PhD. I graduated top of my class almost everywhere I went. Not everywhere. There were some partying years. But my point is, whether it's me or Dennis, who, you know, taught himself calculus in the eighth grade, all of us run into those parts where you write something at the beginning and you think, oh, this sucks. But then you work on it and it sucks less and you work on it. In fact, BB Edit, which is a pretty cool software product back in the day, their t-shirts used to say BB Edit sucks less. And that was their tagline. And they were very popular among software developers. So we try and get into schools and work with them from the very beginning.
And I think the third tip that I would have today is being really conscious of seeking out different voices. And you were talking about being in schools, and that reminds me of a couple months ago now, we were working with the incubator school, and they kind of had on a design project and working with the kids, and they had two groups of students, and they just kind of self-selected. So one ended up being all boys, and one ended up being all girls. And when I went in and would sit down and we'd start the conversation, the boys would really dominate the conversation. The girls kind of sat there quietly. And I made sure to say, okay, well, now what do you girls think? What do you think? And they had really great ideas. But they would have never just offered them up in the same way. And so I think it's really important to, if you see people at the table who aren't speaking up, ask them what their opinions are. Because as it went on, the further we got into the year, the more they would end up speaking up in those sessions. And they had wonderful ideas, but they just weren't sharing them the same way the boys were. And I think that that's something really important. And we also talk about how our company is far more diverse than most tech companies. Well, how is that? It's because we actively seek out, we don't say we are looking for diverse candidates, but we have a broader network. And we say, okay, well, we know a lot of Latinos in tech. And through knowing Latinos in tech, we know other Latinos in tech. And so when you look at who our referrals come from, we have a much more diverse base of people who are referring candidates to us. And by getting that, I think it's so essential, because you start to look in different directions and get different perspectives. And that creates not only a much more diverse staff or set of ideas, but it starts to change that narrative of this is what it looks like to actually this is what it should be.
And that's another self-fulfilling prophecy that you can break out of. There was a professor, I forget her name, she was from Princeton. She did a really interesting study on work. And she said all these people who are successful CEOs, successful hedge fund managers say, well, I got here by hard work. You know, all these people should work like me. I got here by hard work. And she looked at, did they really get here by hard work? So she went back and she reviewed their careers with them. And how did you get your first job? And it was things like, well, You know, I started out at Goldman Sachs as an intern because my family had a house in the Hamptons next door to the CEO. And a lot of these people who are very high level had stories like that. They had connections. There's a particular person that we've come in contact with whose father is a multi-millionaire. And that person started a gaming company that then went nowhere, but they started out getting millions of dollars in investment. Oh, it wasn't because my dad was so-and-so, but having your dad be so-and-so means that you can get those internships. You can get those meetings.
And I don't think what happens in those situations, I think people get defensive and they view that as you're saying I didn't work hard. And it's not saying you did not work hard to get where you're at, but it's saying you had advantages that put you on second or third base to start from. Now, that doesn't mean you didn't run home, but you had advantages in the first place. And I think people, when they hear that, get really defensive because they have worked hard. It's not saying they don't get up every day and they don't grind it out and they don't do all these things, but they're starting from a different spot in the race.
Right. I mean, props to you for not being Paris Hilton or whoever those people are that make sex tapes, but it's not the same thing as somebody who started with nothing. So this is the tips part. So I wanted to give you a tip. What can you do? And we have always had internships in our company, and we recruit out of community colleges. We recruit at ELAC because East LA College has got about 10,000 students, and you better bet the smartest kid at East LA College is going to be pretty damn smart. And you're not competing with 47 other companies like at Stanford. And I know this because we hired the smartest kid out of East LA College, and he's one of our software developers, and he is really smart. So one thing that you should be looking at is go to the historically Black colleges and universities. Go to the Native American colleges. Nobody else is going there to recruit software developers or to recruit interns for their company in finance or whatever. And be cautious about your own stereotypes. Because you know what? Not every intern you hire is going to turn out great. You know, we've had some that turned out great. We've had some that turned out far less than great. And we had some that said, okay, that was a good semester. See you around. Bye. I'm going to go major in philosophy or something, and we don't have any jobs for philosophers. But make an effort, as Murray said, to go out and find those people. There are really bright people everywhere in every group. Yeah, I had a student once, I taught at a tribal college, and she said to me she had never experienced discrimination. And I found that impossible to believe. And so we were talking a little bit. This was probably the best student I ever had. Her writing was amazing. She probably scored 99 or 100% on every test. And when she graduated from high school, they encouraged her to go to secretarial school. So that to me is a huge example of discrimination. She thought it was great because they weren't encouraging anybody else from her high school to go anywhere. So look for those people at tribal colleges, at, you know, or at UCLA. Every place has probably different student unions for, you know, the Mecha, the Movimiento Estudiantil Chicano de Azatlan. Did I say that right? Probably not. But every place got a Mecha chapter or a Black Student Union or the Central Cultural or somewhere like that. You know, actually go out and look for those people. And like I said, you can look for them in the Computer Science Club at East LA College. So that's my tip.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7GenerationGames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, GenerationGames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.